So good morning, good people. How are we doing this morning? Today's podcast, a couple of things I want to cover. First of all, have you ever wanted to fire your boss? If I own my own business, believe it or not, I have the ability to fire my boss. So we're going to talk about that today. But also, I want to talk about, I think at the age of 65, I may have just witnessed my first miracle. And can't wait to share that story because I still have some really cool dreams about it. And no, I'm not a first responder. I'm more of like a second or third responder. But I've got to tell you about what I think could be the first true miracle I've witnessed in a long time. But let's talk about sports for just a second. I know, we're still in this crazy thing called March Madness. I realize that now for like the second time in the history of the NCAA tournament, we have the top four seeds are going to the Final Four. I thought that it had happened a few other times than just twice. But with that, I want to congratulate and throw a shout out to a friend of mine, Coach Bruce Pearl. I don't know if you've ever heard of Coach Pearl. I knew him in his younger days. Going to USI, Coach Pearl was our basketball coach. And you know me, I just like getting to meet and know people. And Coach Pearl and I actually got together on a number of occasions. In fact, I think we landscaped his house one time. Not only that, I was able to hear him speak on a few occasions. So it does not surprise me that he has caught the attention of America because Coach Pearl isn't just a great basketball coach. He's just the kind of person that everybody wants to be around. Did anybody see the end of the game the other night? He won and he had so much fun with his players, and his players had so much fun with Coach Pearl. In my opinion, Coach Pearl is so multifaceted. He's not only a great coach, he's a great person. He's not only good with young people, he's good with old people, middle-aged people. And it was just hilarious to see how his players kept, you know, playing with his hat that said they were going to the Final Four. And I just want to say to Coach Pearl, Mr. Schrader here remembers some of the good old days and can't wait for us to get back together sometime. Maybe we'll play a round of golf or something. But Coach, good luck this weekend. I will be cheering big time. I was kind of hoping the Purdue team might be there also, but wasn't meant to happen. But anyway, Coach Pearl, congratulations, and man, what a great game you guys played the other night. Let's move from that sport to, let's move to golf. Had a really neat opportunity yesterday. Check out my podcast if Emily can get it on there. Was able to entertain some high school golfers yesterday, Modern Day High School, you know, Modern Day, my alma mater, had an opportunity to make my day by coming out to my synthetic turf golf course and play a round of golf. For many of these young men, they had never played on synthetic turf before, and so I was honored to be able to let them come out. Hit a few hundred golf balls, about 50 of them landed in the lake, but they got their first taste of what playing on synthetic turf is all about. The picture, hopefully, that you'll get to see was them surrounding my newest of greens that was installed by Southwest Greens Midwest. pretty interesting to see these young men hit balls from afar onto synthetic turf and then to be able to play on it. So enjoy the picture. And again, as you hear me talk about this private exclusive golf course, that picture gives you a little bit of an idea of what an amazing installation green looks like. So with that being said, I do want to shout out, if you are seriously considering building a golf course or maybe just putting a green in your backyard, Southwest Greens Midwest installed in a green that you're seeing there, and their eye for detail was absolutely amazing. They were here for about 17 days. They put together this green that, again, exceeded my expectation. But what I was super amazed with was not just the product and not just that the technology of synthetic turf greens have come a long way since the last one that I put in about 24 years ago, but this green that you can just tell immediately when you see it and when you play on it, that the detail they put in the probably 150 to 160 tons of base, they did a fantastic job. So I just wanted to throw a shout out to that group out of Columbus, Ohio, that this green is absolutely amazing. Yes, I also like to promote another company, Synthetic Turf International, which is now the Recreation Group, because this was the company that got me going some 24, 25, 26 years ago, that said to me that yes, someday I can build a synthetic turf private exclusive golf course because these products are absolutely amazing. And if I can build a course and still only have to spend a couple hours preparing it for a group, then that makes sense. Yeah, you're probably going to hear it here several times that I do believe the future of golf in the private capacity is going to be synthetic turf. Natural bent grass is amazing, but the amount of time and effort to keep bent grass and to keep non-synthetic turf golf courses going, more and more we're seeing the problems. You're hearing about these golf courses that have been around for a long time, and now some of them are going out of business. My theory is that the upkeep of a major golf course, unless it's just absolutely amazing, is getting tougher and tougher because of all the expense. So, with that being said, golf, basketball, springtime, how can we not be excited? So, John, you want to talk at point about one of the big reasons that you want people out there to consider owning their own business. But before we go there, let's talk about the miracle I just saw about a week and a half ago. Coming back from the east side of town, coming down a fairly busy road, Morgan Avenue, and I'm stopped at a stoplight. And I am at the corner of Morgan Avenue and, you know, that road that intersects with Morgan Avenue. I'll tell you the name of the road as soon as I think about it. But I'm at the stoplight. Second, third car back. And I'm realizing that very soon the light is going to change. And I'm getting ready to take off. And all of a sudden, out of the left corner of my eye, right on the south side, of that intersection, I am seeing a guy about 8 to 10 feet off of the ground doing flips and kind of twirling around, almost, almost like a whirlwind. At first, I don't think I'm seeing what I think I'm seeing, but then as I see him falling back to the ground, I realize that this man has just been hit by a car, and he was literally 8 to 10 feet off of the ground. Well, immediately, my Boy Scout, do a good turn, be prepared, moment jumped in front of me. And so the first thing I did, as soon as the light almost immediately turned green, was I pulled my truck out into the intersection, put on my blinkers, and another truck from the other side did the exact same thing so that we could at least protect and keep anyone from driving through the intersection. I've been in this situation a few times where you've seen a bad accident and the first thing you do is try to prepare yourself for what you're going to see. I've been in some situations where, yes, you go to the car or the truck or the semi-truck and what you're about to see is very disheartening and somewhat disturbing. The way this man was flipping through the air and the way he came down to the pavement, I was preparing myself for broken bones, blood, contusions, a very terrible situation. So as I'm walking towards him, and there's the other gentleman who had parked his vehicle next to mine, as we're now walking to this individual lying on the ground, we are understanding that this could be a tough thing to deal with. But suddenly, I see this person, probably in his early 20s. I see him kind of push himself up from the pavement. And then he just kind of sits there on the pavement. As I approach him, I also see his motorcycle is pretty much destroyed. It's pieces everywhere, or at least, you know, the majority of that motorcycle was in pretty bad shape. As I get to him, my first responder medical question is, let's not shake this guy up, but I'd love to see cognitively, mentally, what kind of shape is he in? Sir, how are you doing, I ask. And as I am asking the question, I can see him now. He's taking his hands and he's moving his fingers. I am seeing no blood. And he's like, I think I'm okay. With that, he gets up. And he walks over to the curb and he sits down on the curb. At this time, you can see that there are people in every car in every direction that is calling 911. And within about 30 seconds, you're starting to hear sirens coming from everywhere. As he sits on the curb, I'm no doctor. I'm not a nurse, and eventually a nurse showed up, but I was at least cognizant to start asking some questions to kind of see where he was. Physically, I was amazed. He is now moving his feet back and forth, and by the way, yeah, his left shoe, have no idea where that was. But he's moving his feet back and forth. He's kind of gyrating his hips. And I am absolutely amazed at what I'm seeing. Hey, just curious, if you say you're feeling okay. Yeah, I'm feeling all right. What happened? I think I just got hit by a car, right? Luckily, the car was wise enough to pull over. That was driven also by a young man who had already come back to see what he could do to help. Hey, do you know what day it is? What's your name? And just some simple questions. Yeah, it's St. Patrick's Day. It's Monday, St. Patrick's Day, and he gave me his name, which I could tell by the way he was talking that this guy was keeping it all together. He still had his helmet on, which was amazing. As I'm looking at the helmet, I really can't see any major scratches, dents, or whatever. But my mind keeps going back to this guy who was literally floating in the air. I talked to other witnesses later that I'm like, how high do you think this guy was off of the ground? How far was he thrown from his motorcycle? Everyone agreed it was 8 to 10 feet at least. About that time, happily for me, a nurse came up and she immediately said to us, I am a nurse, how can I help? And I liked that because she was much smarter about probably what was going on than I was. But she starts asking some questions and she starts feeling certain parts of the body. And amazingly, this guy is just like, I think everything's good. We're all blown away by just how good this guy was. This car that had hit the motorcycle, and gosh, I wish there was a video of it, we realized that it must have hit the part of the motorcycle that it took all the brunt of the concussion. And somehow this guy was able to release himself from the motorcycle, find some air, okay, and then just kind of fall back to earth. As the nurse is now talking to him, we are now hearing the sirens from the fire truck. We're hearing the AMR, the ambulance service. There's probably now 7, 8, 9 different police cars all taking position around this crazy intersection. And the guy is sitting there like nothing had happened. He actually takes his helmet off, and it was at that time that his friend, who was riding his motorcycle in front of him, had come back and was checking him out and said, you know, maybe you should keep the motorcycle helmet on. But at this point, the guy's like, no, I think I'm okay. After about 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and now there's sirens everywhere, and they're trying to get the other cars to move in different areas, this young man is looking about as good as he can. And at that point, I realized my job was pretty much done. And before I left, yes, the police wanted to get our names and phone numbers in case they had questions later. It is my belief and others around me that someone was trying to beat a yellow light. And that yellow light, someone was accelerating at the wrong time or the right time. And so the collision between the motorcycle and the car created for a lot of us a vision that we haven't seen, maybe ever. I get in my truck, I leave, and I realize that, oh my gosh, I think I have just seen one of the most amazing, miraculous moments that I can ever remember. Yes, I've seen and witnessed a lot of accidents and wrecks and things that didn't turn out all so well, but this was different. So, St. Patrick's Day, we'll call it the St. Patrick's Day miracle. I'll always remember it, and hope to see the guy sometime, and would love to hear more of his story and what happened there. Here is kind of the irony. I was thinking, my gosh, the way he fell back to earth, thank God he had that helmet on. About 5 minutes later, I'm driving down Mesker Park Drive, And while I'm on Mesker Park Drive, here comes a motorcycle with an older gentleman, probably in his 50s, and he's feeling a lot of springtime in his motorcycle moment, but he didn't have a helmet on. I wanted so bad to be able to say, hey, you might want to talk to the guy out on Weinbach, and that's what it was, Weinbach and Morgan. You might want to talk to that guy about the value of a helmet. And I just, for the rest of the day, when I talked to young people, I reminded them to wear a helmet. But that was the miracle on Weinbach and Morgan on St. Patrick's Day. So, why do I ever want to own my own business and have employees? Because I just know a lot of people out there that are very frustrated at times with their boss at work, or their manager at work, or their supervisor at work. So, if that's one of you people out there that just get pissed off at the person who's telling you what you can do, and you have this vision, this dream, this idea that I would love to fire his ass, but I can't because he's my boss, and not often do I get to fire a boss. Well, when you own your own business and you work for other people who kind of are your boss, because, yeah, they eventually write a check for you, you always have the ability to fire them if they piss you off. Okay, John, fine, we're listening. How do you fire a boss? And I'm assuming there's some story here, correct? Oh, so you want to hear the story? Okay, fine, I'll tell the story. As our company was going in different directions, because as a landscape company, yes, we couldn't say no to people. People wanted us to do their landscaping. They wanted us to do their maintenance. They wanted us to do their chemical work, their irrigation work, and all kinds of other work. I don't know. I guess they just liked working with our company. So one of the divisions I developed after taking the test, you know, because if you're going to spray chemicals, somebody or several people, they've got to have their class A, class 3A, 3B, whatever. We started doing chemical work. You know, that five-step program where we come out to your yard and we spray your yard five times and your yard is the envy of everyone else in the neighborhood, or at least until that second or third or fourth dandelion pops up and then they call you. We got into the chemical business. And I had a couple different applicators, people that went out and went to your yard and kept your yard looking green and weed-free. One of the applicators actually was my brother-in-law, Larry. Larry was pretty good at what he did. Larry was the kind of guy that he worked hard. He didn't talk much. Didn't have to, because he was so good at what he did, the customers were happy. Until that day. You see, you hear me talk about one of the reasons I loved owning my business was because I was amazed at how good my employees were. And if there was one thing I wanted you to do, was I wanted you to respect my employees, because they deserve that respect. On this particular day, though, however, Larry had given me a call. It was about 10 o'clock, and he said, John, I think that we've made Mrs. Smith mad. Oh, really? How did we make Mrs. Smith mad? Well, I was out doing her lawn, and I guess I was too loud because she came out on the porch and she just really chewed me out because the hose that I was dragging, coming off of the spool of the truck, I guess it was just too loud. And I somehow have woke up her grandchild and she's really mad at me. And she pretty much told me in a lot of different words, some red, some blue, some white, that I should not be in her yard. And she's very upset that her grandchild is awake now. I don't know, John. Maybe I should come back later. Well, Larry, you do what you need to do. I will take care and talk with Mrs. Smith, and let's see if we can figure out what's really upsetting her. So sure enough, I found myself about an hour later after my secretary called and let her know that I was coming out to discuss this terrible situation. Sure enough, I get out there, and as I knock on the door, Mrs. Smith isn't in as bad a mood as I think she was earlier. Maybe it was because she was now talking to me. Maybe, I don't know, maybe the grandchild was back to sleep. But I could tell Mrs. Smith had a different demeanor than what I think she had an hour or two earlier. "Hi, Mrs. Smith," I said. "Just curious, I understand that you were very upset with one of my employees today. Can you tell me a story?" I always like a good story. "Well," she said, I was a little upset because your chemical guy was here this morning and he was treating our lawn. And while he was treating the backyard, we heard this noise. And it wasn't terrible, but it woke up my grandchild. And my grandchild woke up, and I just did not like the fact that my grandchild woke up." "Was your grandchild crying, or did he just wake up?" "He just woke up, but John, that just wasn't right." "Well, Mrs. Smith, I'm sorry that your grandchild woke up. But it sounds like you came down pretty hard on Larry, right?" "Well, I just felt like that wasn't right, that he should be in my yard this morning doing the chemicals, and I just got very upset with him." "Okay," I said, "I can understand that. We all get upset for different reasons, and you're realizing you probably overreacted, right?" "Maybe, I don't know," she said. "So here's what I'll do." I said, "because, you know, Larry takes care of a lot of customers and most all the customers love him. Tell you what I'll do. I will allow you to either, you can call him or he can come by. I'll allow you to apologize to Larry for overreacting. And maybe you guys can have a nice conversation. Shoot, maybe you can even introduce him to your grandchild that he woke up this morning. But I think a good, sincere apology will make everything fine. What do you think?" "I don't feel comfortable with that," she said. "You don't feel comfortable apologizing? You don't feel comfortable talking to Larry? What don't you feel good about?" "Well, I just don't feel like I need to apologize to him just because I got so upset and, you know, did I make him cry?" I just added that. "No, I just feel like you've created such drama that he was pretty shook up, or at least he was thinking and realizing that you were shook up. Why don't you just apologize and we'll all be good?" "I don't want to apologize." Because why? I don't feel like I should have to apologize just because he's your worker. I mean, he's just a chemical applicator, and I'm me, and okay. Maybe you don't want to apologize because a sincere apology would mean that you made a mistake and you're not maybe real wanting to admit to him that you made the mistake and it really wasn't his fault. I'll tell you what I'll do. If you don't want to apologize, and that is your option, I'm going to have to fire you. What do you mean you're going to have to fire me? If you don't feel like an apology to one of my employees who I respect tremendously, and you should respect them also, if you don't want to apologize to my employee, I think we're just going to fire you today. You know, because really you are my boss. I mean, you're really kind of the person that, you know, you pay us money and, you know, we work for you. So you really are kind of my boss, right? She has this confused look on her face, like, I'm not really sure where you're going. Well, Mrs. Smith, if you are sure, and I even will give you 8 more hours, if 8 hours from now you still don't want to apologize for being a real jerk to my employee because your grandson woke up, then, I'm just going to have to fire you. And sure enough, 8 hours later, nothing changed. But I made it very clear to her that now we're firing you, and I guess you'll find another company, and maybe someday people will ask, gosh, Mrs. Smith, why isn't Schrader's doing your lawn anymore? Who knows what she'll say? I bet she won't say that because I got fired. Probably not. But having the ability, because I owned the business, to go out and have a discussion with someone who they thought differently than I do, I had the ability, the empowerment. I really had the right to fire her, and I did. I apologized to Larry that he had to go through what he did. We had a discussion at work the next day about employees and customers and who should get to do and say what they should get to do and should get to say. And I always made it very clear to my employees, you know, to try to be respectful to all of the customers. But in return, I expected every one of my customers to be respectful of my employees. Yeah, we're just landscapers. Yes, we probably don't have a PhD in nuclear physics. But no, it didn't matter. White, brown, red, green, didn't matter who we were. What was important to me was you will respect my employees or I'll fire you. John, how many people in 30 years did you have to fire? How many employees? Honestly, very few. How many customers did you fire? How many bosses did you fire? Honestly, maybe 2 or 3. Oh, so this story you're telling is something whereby, wow, we had the impression you were firing bosses every week, month, 15 a year. No, it really never worked out that way. But the beautiful part in my position owning my own business was that I had that ability if I needed to. And having the ability to fire your boss is another big reason why I want you to consider being your own boss. Regardless of the kind of business you're in, regardless of what you do, you're always going to have, hopefully, some amazing employees, right? And you have that ability to take your employees to a level that's way up here. Because these guys and these girls go out every day and bust their butts to help you grow your business. I want you to consider someday owning your own business so that you have the empowerment that every single day you don't have to take it from a manager or a boss or a supervisor who makes you feel that small, because that's what they want to do. Don't get me wrong. I think most bosses and most managers and most supervisors are really good people. And I think a lot of them out there do respect you as an employee. However, I have been able to share some time with other employees, especially on my sabbatical in the last few years, where some of the employees are so frustrated day in and day out that the conversations they have with their boss puts them in a very tough position. That for 8 hours or 10 hours a day, they're not happy because they've got to put up with their supervisor. There are some amazing supervisors out there. Right, Mike? I had a great one at Deaconess. Mike Wargle, fantastic supervisor. But I was around a lot of employees that most of their day they were in a very bad place because other bosses or management put them in a position that they could never go into their office and say, "Boss, you're fired. The way you treated me out there, the way you've been treating me, the belittling. Boss, you're fired today." Because they didn't have the power to do that, they had to play the game every single day. Owning your own business, having the ability to make every day exactly what you want it to be, having the employees that you could trust that could go out there day in and day out and give you the freedom to go after all of your dreams, most of your dreams, some of your dreams. That's why I talk about respect, CPR, respect of your employees, respect of people. And respecting your customers is so incredibly important. So, why do I want you to someday consider owning your own business, especially if you're so freaking frustrated because the supervisors or the bosses you have right now make you every day go into work with a frown or frustration, that you can't wait until the clock hits 4 o'clock because you can finally get away from that person, Mrs. Smith? That's why I want you to consider owning your own business. And again, I didn't have to fire 30 or 50 or 70 bosses over 30 years. I didn't have to. I did believe most of them, we could have a conversation, we could shake hands, and we could move on. But the ability to not have to move on with them gives me a big reason on why I feel like today I was able to do a lot of the things I did because of that empowerment. Make sense? I hope it does. I know, John, we're hearing all of these reasons to become our own boss. When are you going to start giving us lots and lots of detail on how we can become a successful boss? And that's coming. But before I want to tell you 100, 200, 300 stories on what I think is going to help you become a successful boss, I first got to get you over the hump. I first got to give you a whole lot of reasons on why being an employee for someone can be tough. It can be difficult. It can keep you from dreaming exponentially because every day you've got to take care of them first. Every day for 8 or 10 or 12 hours, you don't have the control in your life that you will have as your own boss. Respecting employees, if you can do that, allowing them to take your business and do amazing things with it while you can think about your last 30, 40, 50 years. That's what today is all about. So don't go out and start saying that tomorrow I'm going to fire my boss. And then the next thing you know, they call in security and someone's like, what in the world are you thinking trying to fire your supervisor? I don't know. I heard this guy in Southern Indiana talking about firing his boss, but I didn't really listen to the entire podcast. All right. I want you to someday think about being your own boss, especially if having to put up with a boss frustrates you so much. And all you could dream about is just going in there and doing exactly that. Doing exactly that. You know, I don't like to talk politics very much. There's 100,000 different people out there that you can listen to, that you can talk politics about. I like listening to the political parties out there. I study every night where our country is going. And it is here. It is wonderful to hear two, sometimes three sides to why our country is the way it is. You know, as a taxpayer, I will say that my Democratic Party right now is they're struggling a little bit. They're trying to figure out what to do with this administration. My Republican Party, they're, you know, trying to really kick butt, and they're trying to get a lot of things done very quickly to try to change where we are today. I've been trying to get a hold of my friend Sean Hannity because I will say this. I'm real curious, do any of you feel like right now, in this next 4 years, do you think President Trump is going to be able to slow down the number and possibly reverse that trajectory? Number? What number, John? John, what number are you talking about? That big number that we all have been talking about for years and years and years. I think it's around $36.5 trillion, maybe more. It's a cool number if you ever watch it. It's going so fast. I think every second millions of dollars are increasing. I definitely feel like what my Republican Party is doing versus my Democratic Party. I do think the Republican Party is trying to say, gosh, we've got to put on the brakes. We've got to start taking this $36.5 trillion. And if you guys trust us and you're patient enough, I think we're going to start someday seeing that number go in the opposite direction. I've got a lot of my friends that thinks that will never happen. We will never decrease the debt of our country. I've got some people who feel like if we're patient enough and we make the right decisions, we could do that. All I'm saying to President Trump is, hey, President Trump, if you really want to impress me and maybe about 370 million other Americans, let's see that number start going down instead of up. I will admit that because of past administrations and past presidents and past decisions that were made and passed by our Congress and House of Representatives, I know it's not going to happen quickly overnight. I do think one of the mistakes you may have made was said that we're going to change things on day one without letting people know that when I say I'm going to change it on day one, that doesn't mean that that 12-pack of eggs is going to be $1.40 in 6 or 7 days. No, I knew you didn't mean that, but you did say day one. My third party, my Libertarian Party, I like my Libertarian Party because I really think for a lot of Libertarians, you know what, they just don't spend a whole lot of time in front of the television trying to analyze CNN and then switching over to Fox and then watching, you know, this and that and this and that. I think they're just having so much fun kind of living their own life and not really caring what the price of eggs are. Most of my Libertarian friends, they already have their chickens, they're already producing enough eggs, they're not concerned about that. Abby Phillips. I want to throw a shout out to Abby Phillips. If you guys aren't big into CNN, Abby Phillips, she kind of does this really cool round table. Started watching her a while back, and she has a round table of both red and blue, sometimes purple people. And I like how she runs the debate. Yeah, I will admit that her questioning sometimes makes you realize that you're watching a CNN debate, but I love the debate. I like seeing how 5 or 6 people can get around a table, bring up a topic. They try to listen to each other. They try to give each other the benefit of the doubt. And yeah, most of the time, like debates that don't have great control, there's a really cool shouting match that goes on. But Abby, I kind of like the fact that you're out there each night and you're letting them talk as best you can. Yeah, you know, it's going to be a while before you become quite as recognizable as Anderson Cooper. And, you know, and then when I switch back over to Laura Ingraham and, you know, Jesse Waters, this is his world. And, you know, that's pretty cool. Johnny, very impressed with Johnny. I like how you go out there and you're not afraid to ask any person, regardless of their color of hair, what they think about things. But Abby, I do make it a point of trying to record you, and, you know, someday, I don't know, maybe you'll have me on at your round table, and I'd love to debate both sides and then give you my ultimate thought on a topic. But right now, my Democratic Party, my Republican Party, my Libertarian Party, you know, somebody's got to do what you guys are doing. I know we struggle with politicians because if we don't agree with them, we want to condemn them, which we never should. You guys just have to do it. But my one friend, Sean Hannity, I think one of the things I like about Sean is that Sean is the kind of guy who says time will tell. Before I pass judgment, before I let my emotions interfere with my intellect, Sean's kind of one of, no question, he definitely leans right, he's definitely red, but I do think over the years, Sean has been one of these individuals that he will say time will tell. And when time does tell and gives us the correct answer, whether you agree with it or not, it's good to know that if it doesn't go Sean's way, he'll actually kind of admit it. He'll be out there and he'll say, yeah, this is what I thought. But I must admit that a lot of times, over time, time tells that Sean wasn't too far off. So, 51 and a half minutes. I promised myself I'd stay under an hour. If I'm sounding more clear today, I think I finally figured out my microphone, thanks to my wife. You get a chance, take a look at a springtime walk. If you like color, you like hearing birds, you like seeing about 100 different landscape thoughts and ideas, enjoy it. Why am I different? Next podcast, I think we're going to talk about why am I different? And I identified that I wasn't ever special, but I am different. And I think it's kind of important that I spend about an hour dealing with why I'm different and why I think it's important for you people out there to understand that there are some amazing people that do some amazing things because they spend 30, 40, 50 years of their life perfecting something. Sean's a pretty good example. There's a guy that, you know, kind of a journalist, kind of a guy that wanted to get out in front of a lot of people, and he does a really good job, whether you like what he says or not. And I think about half of the country right now doesn't really like what he says. But there are a whole lot of people that become amazingly fantastic at what they want to do for their life. But some people that I know are different in the way that when they want to look back on their life, they may not have the blue ribbon or the blue ring like my good friend Mike Gable has a whole bunch of them. They kind of decided a long time ago they wanted to live a life where they wanted to throw out a whole bunch of ideas. They wanted to pursue 20 different things a day. That's kind of who I am. If I do just one thing a day, man, it's not something that enlightens me. If I can go out at the end of the day, I can cross off 25 things on my list, I've had a good day. I'm not necessarily saying I finished every one of the 25, but I at least got to play with it. So my next podcast, if I can be so bold, is to try to reach a lot of you out there that, one, want to own your own business someday, but two, you found out a long time ago that you just can't do one or two or three things. You want to be able to go out and you want to be able to tell a few hundred stories, most of them with a touch of humor. But that's who I think, after 34 podcasts, you're starting to understand who I am. And I'm not too shy to tell you that for some of us, it's an amazing way to live your life. That for some of us, going out and doing 1,000 things was, I think, what God wanted us to do. And I'll just share some of them with you. So with that being said, I'm still under an hour. I love my God. I love my family. Absolutely love this country, because yesterday, because they were playing on my golf course, I got to see some really young people doing some amazing things. And that only happened because I kind of live in a country that allows us to do the kind of things we want to do. And that's where my libertarian friends come in. But as I've told you before, I just enjoy all of you out there. I appreciate so much you listening, you taking the time, and you listen to this podcast. Who knows where it's going to be in a year or two or three from now. Some of it will depend on you. But in loving all those things, I have to tell you that they're not always in that order. But that's okay. We will always struggle with something. And that's okay too. So go out there. Enjoy the spring. Enjoy a great weekend of basketball. Coach Pearl, good luck. I think I saw, were they saying, call God? I'd love to hear the rest of that story. But Coach Pearl, you're the man of the hour. And hopefully you'll be the man this weekend that will get to stand on top of the podium. But if not, you've done one hell of a job. And I'm just proud to say I know you. Take care.